Welcome to Inside New Mexico. I'm Derek Underhill, and I am talking with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, former congressman of the 2nd Congressional District, Steve Pierce. Steve, we've had an extension of basic lockdown in New Mexico. Your thoughts?
I'll tell you, I think Breitbart did a very good article on that this week. They were talking about the lack of science in the New Mexico governor's extension of the lockdown, basically. And what they're saying is that we in New Mexico have about one-third of the cases that are common for the entire nation. We're about 5% of our population has tested positive, and it's around 16% nationwide that have tested positive. And so what their point is, and they have an entire chart, if you go on Breitbart and you just take a look at the articles by Michael Leahy just this last Saturday, then you're going to see an entire chart that shows the progression. We haven't been much above the 5% level each week that has got the updated numbers from the New Mexico Department of Health, and we're still less than 5% of the population has the coronavirus. So their point was that it's possible to begin to reopen without much risk in some of these states that have much higher percentage of the caseload than we do. They're beginning to open up. You have to understand that even with our 5%, that number is averaged up quite a bit by what's going on in McKinley County. The Navajo Nation is really under tremendous pressure. They have a very hard spike going on in cases there, hospitalizations. And so if you look then at the rest of New Mexico, excluding McKinley County, then you wouldn't have nearly as high a percent of population with the virus. Only 172 people in New Mexico as of last Monday were hospitalized. We'll get a new report this coming Monday. But that tells you that there might have been an alternate way to handle this entire crisis. Now, I would add before we move on that the governor, in fact, has assisted the mayor of Gallup. And they went in with the National Guard to lock down all its roads leading into and out of the town. And so extraordinary measure taken by the governor, but that was at the request of the mayor of Gallup. And of course, the Navajo Nation was also asking for some relief, and we'll see if this is the proper relief or not.
The first models we saw predicted a lot more people were going to die from this. And so I can understand, you know, the governor looks at these things. She's not an expert. She goes by the data she gets. However, we found out now that those models were wrong. So why not change as the data changes? That's what I'm wondering. Like you said, we're not seeing as much of this virus as we originally thought. So why not back off?
Well, that was exactly the point of the Breitbart article, that the governor seems to be relying on models that were generated by Los Alamos Labs. The National Institutes of Health that has been monitoring the disease has steadily downgraded their forecast of the number of deaths that are going to result from this COVID-19. But it doesn't seem like that the models that the governor is looking at are downgrading it at all. It makes you wonder because our caseload is so much less, like I said earlier, about a third of what the national average is. And so you have to wonder about that.
It's easy to criticize, but you had run for that job. You had run for governor in New Mexico. So I'm real curious what you might have done in this situation. And if you had a mayor like the mayor of Grants, who may have disobeyed an order that you put out, what you might have done.
Well, first of all, let's take it backwards from what I would have done in the situation with the mayor of Grants. Again, he is representing his business community and the community of Grants. I talked with him last week a couple of times. He and I are good friends, and he's a registered Democrat. He has always been a straight-up guy. He told me there that their budget for the town is running about 30% short. That means that eventually he's going to have to start laying off maybe up to 30% of the workforce that works for the city of Grants. And so you just have to understand that he's doing what he thinks he should. All of the businesses there, it was either 83 or 84 businesses signed a petition asking the mayor to do this. And so in essence, he is complying with what his constituents are asking him to do, both from the community perspective and then from the business perspective. As governor, what I would have done in this situation, if he felt it necessary to go against an order that I had put out, I would probably drive over and let him escort me through the town to show me what he's seeing. At that point, then I think we would come to a similar resolution. Instead, the mayor was served with a writ of mandamus, which basically tells him he's got to comply. And then the Supreme Court came out as an additional voice in the discussion and told him he must comply. That means that layoffs probably are going to be coming to the city employees at Grants, Mexico. But then to the full question of what I would have done, I think it's essential. I think I would have done pretty much what Kristi Noem of South Dakota is doing. I know her. We served in the Congress. We approached things very similarly. And I think that her method of just telling the business community, telling the residents of South Dakota, here is what we're facing. And if you will go out and take care of your own circumstance, if you have great risk, then you probably want to be more careful. If you have less risk, as established by the medical community, then you may engage more with others than what you might do if you're very susceptible. Likewise, she told the business community, I'm going to let you all decide how and what to do with your business. I would recommend that you social distance. I would recommend that you do these things. But she did not shut down the entire state, and I do not think I would have shut down the entire state of New Mexico. Those are the differences, I think, in just the perception from it's not a political viewpoint. It is a personal viewpoint. Kristi Noem obviously trusted the people to be mature enough to shelter themselves if they needed it, to accept more contact with others if they felt like they could. And it has worked out well. Their business community has not been devastated like the small businesses in New Mexico. And so I think that's an important distinction between kind of political viewpoints. It's not a political question, but it is a political viewpoint that Republicans typically believe in trust of the individual, and the big government tends to be on the side of the Democrats. And I think you're seeing that play out right here in this state as it compares to other states. Texas is 3 miles from where I live. You can look across the border and see the economic activity starting back there, and it is not starting here. To be fair, the governor did make some concessions to small businesses, but they were meager. If I were in small business, I would consider it a slap in the face. She says that you can have curb service. Who is going to go and shop for clothes, having you bring things out to the curb when they can walk into Walmart and walk among the clothes racks, try things on, look at it, handle it, and see how it feels? You're not going to go to some place where they're going to have to bring it out to the curb. Likewise, nurseries. You can go into Lowe's and Home Depot, pick up the plants that look the healthiest. You're going to have the things brought out to the curb if you're a locally owned nursery. So again, it's that disparity between the rules for locally owned businesses as compared to the rules for the big out-of-state corporations. It's a sad day for small businesses in New Mexico. Later in the program, we've got one of those small business owners coming on. She received a $60,000 fine. Her husband is a veteran. He's disabled, and they are in Grants. So fascinating. But stay tuned. We've got Mark Lauder. Mark is the Director of Strategic Communications for Trump 2020. So a great show remaining for you today. Stay with us, and we'll get to both of those segments in just a moment.
On behalf of the New Mexico Department of Health, take COVID-19 precautions. Wash your hands frequently for 20 seconds. Don't touch your face. Use a tissue or your elbow to catch your sneeze or cough. Avoid large gatherings and close contact with sick people, especially if you are elderly or high risk. If you have a cough, fever, or shortness of breath, stay home from work or school. Do not go to the ER or doctor's office without first calling the coronavirus hotline. And avoid all unnecessary out-of-state travel. Help prevent the spread of COVID-19.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico with the chairman of our Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. We have a guest on the line that I think our listeners will really enjoy.
Yes, Mark Lauder is the Director of Strategic Communications for the Trump 2020 campaign. Now, formerly, he was a special assistant to the president. But first of all, Mark, you are from Fort Wayne, Indiana, went to Ball State. So as a special assistant to the president, tell me a little bit about what your job was.
Well, my main job was to serve as press secretary to Vice President Mike Pence. And as part of that, I was also a special assistant to the president. So I was basically the counterpart to the White House press secretary, who was Sean Spicer when we first went in, and then obviously Sarah Sanders was there also when I was there. And so I was the vice president's press secretary and worked as the counterpart to the White House press secretary, helped prepare them for their daily briefings, and traveled the world with the vice president during his international travels. Also traveled quite a bit with the president, especially then after I left the White House, serving in their political operation. I spent most of the 2018 campaign season traveling either with the vice president or the president as they were traveling around the country for various candidates.
Some press secretaries just are able to hit the ball. What made Sarah Sanders so successful? Because not every press secretary just comes across that believable. What was her secret?
I think Sarah was exceptional. And I think it's because, she had a strong mastery of the material, but then she also had this unique ability. And there are a few great communications people in politics that I think have this ability to be able to take very complex policies or information and relate it to the common man and woman who doesn't live in that policy world. And she could relate to people as a young woman, as a family person, as a mother, and also as someone who'd been in politics and public service for a very long time. So she had that unique ability to connect with people on a very individual and human basis. And I think that's one of the many reasons why Sarah was such a strong press secretary.
Talk a little bit about the cost of this COVID-19 to the nation. What is it going to cost us in the long run? I think that's the question that we've ought to be asking right now.
Well, I think there are multiple costs. Obviously, the human cost in terms of the number of people who have succumbed to the virus, who have been gravely injured by the virus, that is one absolute cost. The fact that we had to shut down one of the strongest economies in history and hit a pause on that economy is also going to have a very significant and very real cost. It will cost into the trillions of dollars as we try to help companies get through these difficult times in the millions of people who work for those companies because they have had their lives and their livelihoods put on hold due to no fault of their own. I think one of the positive costs or benefit costs out of coming out of this is going to be the fact that we're finally going to be able to align a national public health platform and strategy that was never designed to do what we're needing it to do right now. And we found out this the hard way, that we had a testing system that was not necessarily designed to track a rapidly evolving and changing pandemic such as this. It was fine for tracing influenza and for other things. But when there is a rapidly changing system, it wasn't designed to do that. Also, it exposed weaknesses in our supply chains and the fact that too many of our products and companies and public health institutions have relied on cheap manufacturing from China and from other countries. And when all of a sudden we are in a global capacity in a pandemic such as this, well, we may not be able to rely on that supply chain, whether it is the end result or the materials that go into those products. So I think the opportunities that we see coming out of this are going to be, one, to increase the state and local testing platforms so they can be quickly nationalized as necessary if we face a future pandemic such as this. But number two, I think a lot of companies are going to realize that we cannot put all of our eggs in an overseas basket when it comes to our supply chains, when it comes to the logistics, and that at the end of the day, we've got to be able to produce the medicines, the technology, the testing requirements, the kits, the supplies that go into that. We have to be able to supply that here. That way we know that when push comes to shove, the American people are taken care of. We have to acknowledge the economic challenges that are currently being faced by many companies, by many individuals, in many industries. But the other thing we also have to remember is that this is the first economic upheaval that I can remember in our modern history that has not been caused by economics. This is not like the Great Recession with the real estate market collapse or the tech bust of the late 1990s or the energy crisis of the 70s or even the Great Depression. There is no underlying economic problem that caused this. And so we will be in a much different position and a much stronger position to come through this as we start to emerge from the public health side of this.
Joe Biden has had allegations leveled just in the last couple of weeks by Tara Reid. It's not the first time the allegations have been raised. She raised those back when the incident occurred, but she says that she was sexually assaulted by then Senator Joe Biden, and yet the press remains totally silent. But amazingly, the Me Too movement has remained totally silent. Any observations on this thing that is developing right now?
One of the things that we have seen, and it is nothing new, but it should be deeply disturbing, is that there are two sets of expectations or justice or senses of fairness in our country when it comes to the mainstream media. There is one, there is a standard they hold Republicans to, and then there is a standard they hold themselves to, and it is completely different. And you can just look at the Brett Kavanaugh situation and now how it compares to what is going on with Joe Biden, and to see that, you know, it dominated front page headlines. It dominated cable news coverage for days on end. They were demanding all kinds of investigations from the FBI and others. But when it is one of their own, it's completely different. It's pretty much washed under the rug. He went for 25 interviews over the course of a month and did not get one single question about it. And then he finally was able to address it in a friendly atmosphere on MSNBC. You even had follow-ups with the New York Times saying we need an unbiased investigation led by the Democrat National Committee. I mean, how can you say unbiased right. and have the Democrat National Committee? It just shows you literally how consumed they are with nothing even coming close to fairness or balance.
We're visiting with Mark Lauder, the Director of Strategic Communications for the Trump 2020 campaign. We all, the nation, sat, and I think just the stomach turned as we had the whole impeachment. It looks like they're going to transition across to an investigation of who knew what when on the COVID-19 crisis. So tell me a little bit about what's really going on. Are the Democrats actually going to pursue this as a full all-out investigation?
Well, it sounds like they're going to launch their latest witch hunt on this in the House of Representatives. You already have a lot of Democrats in the House demanding their own investigation as another way to make this partisan. But what we all know is that China lied. They lied to the world. The World Health Organization covered up, and it delayed many countries having the information they needed to be able to move forward. And when we have moved forward, obviously we're doing so in a way that is trying to protect as many lives as possible.
We've been visiting today with Mark Lauder. He's the Director of Strategic Communications for Trump 2020. And you can take a message back to the president. I believe he already understands and knows it. But New Mexico, deep blue state, is going to vote for Trump in 2020. I think he's going to lead us to turn the state red for the first time in about 70 or 80 years. Thanks for taking time to visit with us today. Good luck and God bless you.
Well, thank you, Steve, and look forward to getting back out there.
Coming up in our next segment, we'll be talking with Diane Rowe. She's the owner of Papa's Pawn and Gun in Grants, New Mexico, that defied the governor's order. She kept her business open and now has been fined $60,000. That's coming up on Inside New Mexico.
Attention, New Mexico veterans. If you were honorably discharged from the U.S. Armed Forces, you've earned state and federal benefits, and the New Mexico Department of Veteran Services is standing by to assist you. State benefits include a veteran's property tax exemption, education and training, and transportation services. We can also assist with claims for federal VA benefits. The state of New Mexico and this radio station thank you for your service. More information at nmveterans.org or 1-866-433-8387.
Welcome back to Inside New Mexico with our chairman of the Republican Party of New Mexico, Steve Pierce. And Steve, we're heading out to Grants, New Mexico.
We're joined in this segment with Diane Rowe. She and her husband, Paul, work a small business in Grants, New Mexico called Papa's Pawn and Gun Store. Diane, tell us a little bit about you and Paul. Tell us about your background, how you came to be in business for yourself, and just share with our listeners a little bit about your story.
My husband and I were both born here in Grants, and he was raised here. I was raised in Gallup. We've been back here since 93. Had a road service business for a long time. We've always liked pawn shop. And our big joke was someday we were going to own a pawn shop. We were going to be on the other side of the counter.
Well, that's a great thing. So you just like the pawn shop. What do you like about that? Tell me a little bit more.
You never know what kind of treasures you're going to find in a pawn shop. You go in and you dig and look for treasures. And we have used pawn shops at times in our lives when a bank was not an option. You know, for a lot of people here, pawn shops are essential. Pawn shops are essential to our clients. The bottom line is every business is essential to their clients.
You're saying that people can't make it paycheck to paycheck,
Let's say that I am in a position where I need that $50 till this coming Friday. What would you expect to get from me?
We take a lot of things. Things that obviously a bank won't take as collateral. We do tools. We do jewelry. We do firearms because we do have a firearm license. We do collectibles, coins.
So not only do you provide an essential service, but you also do it right now for something of value that other people have. But I don't know any other business that would actually do that. So the essential nature of people who can't go to a bank and get a loan is completely overlooked by at least one political party in the entire country. The Democrats tend to want to come and shut you down anyway. Let's talk a little bit about the firearm part of your business. How much of your business is that?
A lot of our business is firearms. Probably the bigger percentage of our business is firearms.
That you sell to law enforcement officers, ammunition, guns, or whatever. And so have they been in your store during this 12 days that have been in question from the governor?
Absolutely, they have been. They're here probably weekly. We have someone come in from our local police department, from the sheriff's department. We also take care of a good amount of people who work for the correctional facilities. We carry holsters, duty belts, not just ammunition and firearms, but accessories as well. Radio pouches. In fact, radio pouches is our big thing.
Okay, and so you have these people coming in. And so when the governor said that some businesses are essential, you made an adequate and a fair statement earlier that all businesses are essential to someone. So we're leading up to the idea that the governor's sent people over, several uniformed officers showed up and levied a $60,000 fine on you for operating 12 days. Did you get any warning about this? Did people visit and say, hey, you think you're essential, but we think you're not. Tell us a little bit about the process by which you received the notification.
The police officers did bring me a warning and said that I was in violation of the Department of Health code. And I said, I don't believe I'm in violation of the Department of Health code. I have two customers at a time in my shop. We are sanitizing everything constantly. We're not letting browsers in. We don't let children in. And our customers have been really good about it. They've been really understanding. And we're doing 6-foot distancing. We're doing exactly what the big box stores are doing, only we're doing it better because we can control it better.
Yeah, the big box stores. I was in the grocery store just yesterday. 204 people at a time. The sign on the door says that's how many people are allowed in. And yet you're allowing two at a time. See, this is the difference in another part of the program. We talked about Kristi Noem, who's the governor of South Dakota, and she let businesses decide. She told them what the risks are. And then you all decide what you need to do to protect yourselves, your customers, and maybe you don't want to be open at all. And they were allowed to do essentially what you're doing. You're taking very stringent precautions. They're not wiping everything down that is touched over in the big box stores. I'll guarantee it. People are coming in. They're picking up tools. They're setting them back down. Nobody's there monitoring that. If you have somebody touch a firearm, you're going to wipe it down after you finish. So a lot of precautions that you're taking that the big box stores never would. And yet you are deemed to be in violation. And you look across the street at the big box store, they're allowed to do things that you can't do. That's the piece we've been taking the governor on, saying that it's unfair, that it's discriminatory against local businesses, that mom and pop stores like yours are the heartbeat of any community. Now, one of the things that I became aware of by talking to your mayor is that 84 of the businesses in Grants signed a petition asking that the mayor would stand up for you all, that he would deem you all essential and open the doors. Tell us a little bit about that petition process. I guess you had signed on to that.
I was asked to help get a petition together for the businesses and kind of feel out what the situation was. We did come back with 83 signatures of businesses that thought we ought to be able to open. That didn't ensure that those 83 businesses would open. What it did was it gave them an opportunity to open. That gave the mayor an idea of who wanted to open community. So that's why we did that.
I've represented Grants, and I can't imagine 83 businesses in Grants signing onto this. That would have to be almost every business in the community signed on. Is that correct?
People don't realize how many businesses, how many small businesses we have in Grants. I assure you, if they're in business and they're staying in business, they have customers.
Do you have the big box stores in Grants? Do you have Walmart? Do you have Home Depot, Lowe's?
No, we have Walmart. We've got Smith, Family Dollar, Dollar General, and we have an Ace Hardware.
And all of those were allowed to be open, but you were required to be closed.
Correct.
Okay. Again, thanks Absolutely. To you and your husband. God bless you. Keep the faith, and we'll be in the fight with you.
Okay, thanks.
That was Diane Rowe from the Papa's Pawn and Gun Shop in Grants. They've been fined $60,000 for staying open, violating Governor Lujan Grisham's orders. She did tell me that a GoFundMe page has been set up for her to help her pay that $60,000 fine from the state of New Mexico. We hope you'll stay engaged with what's happening at the Republican Party of New Mexico. There's a website. It's www.gopnm.org. You can get the latest news, upcoming events, information about elected officials, voter resources, and all kinds of important and useful information about the party and its mission. You can hear previous editions of this program. We also invite you to go to the party's Facebook page. Check out their Twitter account. The handle is @NewMexicoGOP. The Republican Party of New Mexico is always looking for volunteers to help them with their mission to win New Mexico for President Trump and to turn the roundhouse red. You can call the party headquarters at 505-298-3662. That's 505-298-3662. For Steve Pierce, I'm Derek Underhill. I look forward to visiting with you again next week right here on Inside New Mexico.